The message I've been preaching is on First Fruits. I want you to start out 1985 right. My message is simple. If you're going to be a Christian, be one. Don't be like the rest of these half and half idiots. They neither know how to sin nor how to be a good Christian. What a miserable life. They don't know how to sin, scared to. And untutored in Christianity. That's the wilderness experience. You've left Egypt. Haven't gotten to the promised land. You're just not willing to do it God's way. Exodus 23. Been there all week. Now, there's going to be somebody call in and say to me, what about that eighth verse? Thou shalt take no gift. You shouldn't take these gifts. Check the margin, friend. Another one of those King James bad translations. Thou shalt take no bribe. So now that we've got that behind us, let's get on with give gifts to God through His servants. 10th verse, 6 years thou shalt sow thy land, and thou shalt... Well, let's go back to tithes and offerings. Just keep your finger in that passage, and let me read to you Malachi. Will a man rob God? Malachi 3:8. Yet ye rob me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? Answer, in tithes, can you say it with me? Not tithe, tithes... I want to emphasize the plural. Tithes and offerings. It's not or, tithes or offerings. It's conjunctive. In tithes and offerings. What's the consequence? You know, no big deal. No big deal. I like to keep the tithes and the offerings so I can buy myself Cadillacs and windmills and jet airplanes. Pretty clothes and baubles. You're cursed with a curse. You're cursed with a curse. And that's a lot more than warts and embarrassing places. That's a widespread curse. Affects your pocketbook, affects your life, affects your health. Every part of your being. Cursed with a curse. Do you know what it's like to be cursed by God? I've had a few self-styled saints get bothered about me cursing them. You ain't seen nothing yet. Cursed with a curse by God. What's a curse from God look like? Let's just sort of make sure today that we get all of the Bible going on these things. Just keep your finger there in Malachi 3. Now, you got more than two fingers. So we've got a long ways to go. Don't get, you know, you've still got eight fingers to do other things with. Haggai 1, page 1013. You've got a Bible like mine. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Oh, well, that lets me out. We're not building a house today for the Lord. You're not? My Bible in the New Testament said, ye are God's house. And you build up God's house with the seed of the Word because it's a growth. There has never been a house of God built by God's people as important as the one we're building. Ye are the house of God. Rooted, grounded, and established in the Word. And most of the church world builds nothing but cribs for you to lay in instead of making you become the house of God. So, you know, don't lay it on me. We are building the house of God with this teaching. Well, but I got other things to do, you know. I listen to you every night, but I mean, I got my problems. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." Stop everything that you're doing with your mind right now and put it in the right place. Focus your mind on the Lord. Consider your ways. Now, I'm watching everybody in this room. Come a class right now, quickly. And pay attention to me. And I don't really like Voices of Faith to come here without a Bible. I want to tell you that going out the gate so that you can do it right next time around. That's part of your admission ticket. Once again, I'm going to lay it on all of you today. I'm not here to entertain Voices of Faith. You're here to pull it out of me. So I don't want to catch any wondering eyes, vacant stares. I'm that kind of teacher, I can tell when you're looking at me, but I know your eyeballs are looking the other way. You got ants in the pants? Go home where you can take your pants off and scratch. And since I'm starting out that way, some of you Voices of Faith that know what my requirements are in here, you better get in the car and get on the way. It is an honor to be in this room. And this old crotchety teacher would make the President of the United States pay attention if he were sitting here. Or I'd throw him out. This is God's word. And I've said, I don't want to say any more. Consider your ways. Focus your attention on what you're doing. Just take a look at yourself, friends, all over this nation. 1985 is just starting out. How'd you do in 1984? You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there's none warm. Boy, what a song this could make. He that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. You know, there's a brand of music in America we call tear-jerkers. This would make a good tear-jerking song. A bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. You know why that name is used? It doesn't say the Lord of peace, the Lord your shepherd. See, the Hebrew doesn't read like that. It's Jehovah with another name attached, like Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah Shalom, Jehovah Rohi, Jehovah Rophai. The Lord of hosts is that particular Jehovah name that announces his total control over everything. He can bend inanimate objects to serve his purpose. He can change the weather, move the waves of the sea. He can even make oil flow from your neighbor's property into a pocket on your property and rearrange the geologic structure. Oh, I don't believe that. Well, he spoke and not a thing became all that we now have in this world. He's going to have big trouble with that. He can create a little old dome in the rock down there and fill it with oil right under your soil where you're going to drill for water. I pick the extreme. to let you know that the Lord of hosts can do anything. He can make sparrows land in your yard and lay golden eggs. He probably won't. But he can arrange things without showing off. But that's what the name means. Lord of hosts means he can do anything. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain, bring wood, build the house, I'll take pleasure in it, and I'll be glorified. You looked for much, and lo, it came to little, and when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Do you ever get the feeling that something's blowing on your money? I did blow upon it. It just, you know, there it was, and then there it wasn't. Never, I'm making more, but having a harder time. I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of mine house that's waste. Well, I'm going to tell you, the house of the Lord today is waste. They're beat on and scarred and dumped on. I mean, I don't know where some of these Sunday preachers are going to stand when they come before the chief shepherd and say, look at your house, Lord. I beat it into shape. Bruised and bloody. And cowering and afraid to live or move for fear they'll step on a shadow and become a sinner. The house of God, laid on the anvil of Christian television every Sunday and beaten into insensibility. The house of God has never needed builders like they need it today. And I'll say this, we're building it up. We're bringing sinners in. Instead of transplanting saints. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. When you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that's waste. And ye run every man into his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I call for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. That's God's curse. Back to Malachi 3. Ye are cursed with a curse. I just described it. Ye've robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes. But they tithe. I even had some stupid pastor tell one of my king's houses, who went to her pastor about this, that means because the message was to a big congregation of people, it meant one tithe from each of the people, and that's why it's in the plural. I hope the king's house got out of that church in a hurry and would not be pastored any longer by a man that ignorant of God's word. That's a crime. But I want to tell you something. 99 out of 100 pastors in America have never, ever found out for themselves, much less taught their people, that there is a first and a second and a third tithe. They don't teach it, because if they were to preach it effectively, they'd get themselves under condemnation for their own lack of giving. Very few pastors practice or teach tithing the biblical way. And they wonder why their churches are not making it, and they get so envious of me when they see how much you people give. If I don't teach you, I don't care if you do it for your own church. I'm telling you what you have to do to be blessed. If I don't teach you, you should do this for your own church. Wherever your storehouse, wherever the food is that you eat, which is the spiritual life sustenance that makes you grow as the house of God, that's where your tithe belongs. And if you don't pay it, you're cursed. This is the promise. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse. And prove me now, not tomorrow, now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. Again, Lord of hosts, he can do it. Now, many of you have learned the joy of tithing, and you've claimed that promise. Now, you're a robber and cursed with a curse if you rob God of tithes and offerings. Malachi 3:10 says, bring the tithes, and you get this promise. And that's where some of you stop short. You've cured the theft of tithes, but there's still the overhang of theft of offerings. Now, what about the offerings? Well, the most prominent offerings in the Old Testament were the burnt offerings and the first fruit offerings. Meat offerings and peace offerings were a close second, and sin offerings God took care of in the New. Now, if you were in the Old Testament, every time you sinned, you'd have to pay an offering. You realize how broke that'd keep most of us? Every trespass, every sin, you got to pay. And it was cheap because the full payment required was death. So, you know, a yearling bull, that's cheap. Or firstborn of a lamb. But in the New Testament, the sin and trespass offerings have been bought up by Christ. But how about the rest of them? And we're on first fruits. That's just one. Now, some people think you can get by with just 10%. Seventh year thou shalt let it rest. 6 years thou shalt sow. We're back to Exodus, page 93, 23rd chapter. 6 years thou shalt sow thy land and shalt gather in the fruits thereof. Now, God gave them the land. They had their name on it. This lot is for Asher. This lot's for Zebulun. This lot's for Naphtali. This lot's for Ephraim. This lot's for Benjamin. But God laid some terms down, Lord of hosts. 6 years thou shalt sow thy land, shall gather in the fruits thereof. But the seventh year thou shalt let it rest and lie still, that the poor of thy people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field shall eat. In like manner thou shalt deal with thy vineyard and with thy olive yard. You say, now, it's okay for me to give my tithes to Ethiopia? Uh-uh. Just figure out 1/7 of your income. Give that to Ethiopia. Don't rob God with your tithe. Huh, wait a minute. You've already gotten to give him 10% in the first tithe and 10% second and third tithe, and you're about to land on me with offerings. My Lord, I can't give a seventh to the poor. Well, I don't care whether you give a seventh to the poor or not, but don't rob God's tithe to do it. That's the point I'm making. Well, no. Well, doesn't God care about the poor? Sure. How can I afford that? Well, I'll tell you how they afforded it in the Old Testament. The ones that did it, they didn't, by the way. They didn't do it. For 490 years, they failed to keep the Sabbath year. 490 years. So God took it back. He sent them into bondage in Babylon for 70 years. Now ask yourself whether they could afford it or not. He's going to get his portion out of you one way or the other. But there's a blessed side to it. You see, God reads the heart. He knows. He knows what your commitment is. To those that kept the Sabbath year, he, the Lord of hosts, so increased the sixth year that they didn't have to work for a whole year. It was the same as the manna in the wilderness. Go out and gather manna every morning. He told them how much to gather. Some of them were afraid he wouldn't rain the manna down the next day, so they gathered double portion. And it rotted. And then lo and behold, on the sixth day, they were to gather a double portion because the manna wasn't going to fall on the Sabbath. And it didn't rot. All that is teaching God's care and control. He didn't shortchange his people. He gave them a double portion, the 6th year. You know what? God got a lot more because he got a tithe on a double portion. But no, we got people today. They give $1,000 a month no matter what comes in. Or they give $100 a month no matter what comes in. Now, as long as they're making about $300 a month, they find paying tithe okay. $30 a month on their $300 they can pay. But when God honors them for paying tithe, they seem to learn how forget how to count when it comes to God when they reach the stage where they're making $10,000 a month and $20,000 a month and $30,000 a month. I got people watching me that make $1 million a year. And they give $1,000 a month. I got others giving $1,000 a month. But that's more like 20 and 30% of their income. And I'm well aware of that. I got people making $1 million a year that watch me every night and don't give a dime. You're so high bracket that you're into sophisticated tax planning. You take a lot of your income in stock options. I understand stock options. Transfer them to old Scott. I get 10%. Plus the fact, if you got some stock options, first of the month in 1985, first fruits. All of them. And you may have decided if you took your bonus at Christmas, it would put you in a higher tax bracket, so you held it over till January. I appreciate you making those plans for God. First check of 1985, the amount is the Lord's. You can't look beyond your present supply to the supplier. That's the problem with most people. You can't get in touch with. You say, well, what if I do this and it doesn't work the way you're saying? Take it up with God when you get over there. The difference between me and the humanistic faith preachers, I told you that last night. Rest in the New Testament is promise obtained. And the command is, this is the life of faith. When you see a promise of God, let us labor to enter into that rest. The same word in the Greek is used in the Septuagint to translate in the book of Joshua when the children of Israel crossed over Jordan. It says they hasted over Jordan. It could just have literally been translated, because that's the way they do it in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. They labored over Jordan. When they got on the other side, they were in the Promised Land. First thing God did was cripple them. Circumcised all of them. Here they are between Jordan at flood stage and Jericho walled up, crippled. They still had to trust God to conquer the giants, drive the squatters out, enter, occupy, possess what God had promised. And we are to labor to enter into the rest of all the promises of God, which in Him are yea and in Him amen. Our choice is simple as this. If God said it, forever it's settled in heaven, I'm going to have it. If I don't have it here, I'm going to die claiming it. And there better be extra portions in eternity. Because when I get the rest of the promise obtained, the labor's over. And the energy of faith is no longer being released, which lays up treasures in heaven. And the minute you get a promise obtained, you better start looking for another one to grab hold of. Because this faith walk is forever grabbing a promise of God that's contradicted with something down here, and you grab it, and you're going to hang on till you die in the process, or you enter into that rest. Now, if you don't get the rest of the promise obtained down here, you enter into that Sabbath rest of heaven, with treasures innumerable because of the grip of faith as you were making the trip. Now, God has promised. You saw the curse for robbing and the promise for tithing. The curse for robbing applies to offerings. And I'm not even to the first fruits yet. I'm just pointing out, you know, God takes care of the charity. Takes care of charity. Seventh year thou shalt let it rest and lie still, that the poor thy people may eat. Do you understand what I'm saying? One-seventh charity. Learn to distinguish between charity and tithes and offerings to the Lord. Every seventh year, it all went to the poor. If this were a Christian nation and everybody did it God's way, we'd be so prosperous, the world would be envious, sinners and saints, and there'd be no poor. All those that are doing it God's way, getting blessed, would pay one-seventh of their income to charities. And the poor would be taken care of. Now that we got that out of the way, I'm not taking the charity offering today. That's up to you. I don't want charity. I don't even want to handle charity. I don't even consider our orphanage charity. That's part of my ministry. I do it. You'll share in it over there as long as I'm faithful. I just want it understood that Ethiopia and the house of God are not synonymous. Charity and tithes and offering are not the same. And if you're interested in giving to the charity functions, do it God's way. Don't take it out of your tithes and offerings. Now, 6 days shalt thou do thy work. On the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest. And I said to you last week, I've been wanting to rest my ass for 9 years. I really believe in this Sabbath business. I've become a convert. I mean, tell you, not for religious reasons, just for wearing down reasons. That I even considered, you know, an implant. Modern science removes the need of a Sabbath. Just get a little silicone. Silicon in place of the Sabbath. Not me. I want that. I want to rest my ass. I really do. You write a song dedicated to your pastor. He needs to rest his ass. His precious little ass. That it may be refreshed. Now I'm going to become a Sabbatarian overnight. Has nothing to do with religious motivation, just a weary ass. What I said. In all things that I have said unto you, be circumspect. What I need to be circumspect about a weary ass. And make no mention of the name of other gods. They'll just handle the ass first, not even worry about the other gods. Neither let it be heard out of thy mouth. Now, 3 times thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. My Lord. 3 weeks out of the year you can't work. 3 weeks out of the year, you can't make no money. 3 weeks out of the year, you got to pay travel expense and go to the place God designates. 3 weeks out of the year, you got to bring sacrifices and offerings. 3 weeks out of the year, you got to fund your family, room and board. Where am I going to get that money? Plus the fact I ain't working those 3 weeks. 3 whole weeks out of the year. 3 52s. 3/52 of my income used up No, thanks be to God, he says, I can buy anything that my heart lusteth after. Wine, and indulge myself those 3 weeks, but can't work. Got to pay travel expenses. Got to pay travel expenses. Got to support my family. Got to eat. Got to offer. Why, that third one, Feast of the Tabernacles, 203 sacrifices in 1 week. Expensive proposition. Worship God. Feast of Unleavened Bread, which begins the evening of the Passover. Runs for 7 days, and in the middle of it is the first fruits feast. Year by year. On the first day of the week that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread that runs from sundown the day of Passover for 7 days. Feast of Harvest, that's Pentecost. That's what they were all in Jerusalem for on the day of Pentecost when the church was born. That's in the summer. Third, the Feast of Ingathering, which is the end of the year when thou hast gathered in thy laborers out of the field. Feast of the Trumpet starts it. 10 days later comes the Day of Atonement. 5 days later starts the Feast of the Tabernacles. And there you've got to move out and live in a temporary structure made out of trees and bring 203 sacrifices to God. 3 times in the year you got to do this. That means 3 paychecks a year got to be laid aside. And you use that to pay the bill to go and do your joint responsibilities to God. That's the way you pay your gas bill to serve on these phones. That's the way you support coming and going to church every week. What these were those activities that they all did together out of recognition of God's right to command, and that there are certain things that we can do together we can't do separately and individual. On top of that, the third and sixth year, second tithe becomes the third tithe. The 10% on the 90% of your estate, the earnings that you make off of it, the third and sixth year was designated for, and year one, year two, year four, year five, the second tithe was the 10% on your earnings over and above the first tithe, which is 10% on everything you have. In the third and sixth year, that second tithe was designated and took the name of a third tithe because it was to be reserved to pay the bill for these 3 feast days. So you didn't work for 3 of the weeks. So if you want a modern equivalent of the third tithe and these feast days, it's 3 paychecks a year, plus 10% in the third and sixth year, which I can factor down. It simply represents two-sevenths of your income, plus 3 paychecks a year, is what you lay aside to enable you to pay all the bills, to participate in the joint activities of the work of God that you've been called to do. You know, I'd put it on the board and make it mathematical if you want it. Here's tithing. Going out the gate, God gets 10%. That's it. Now all the rest of this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. God gets all of this. That's first tithe. Now he gets 10% of the rest of this. That generally is called the second tithe. put in the first, second, fourth, and fifth years, it, strictly speaking, represents the second tithe. In the third and sixth years, that which is generically the 10% becomes not the second tithe, but the third tithe. And this is specifically reserved for the joint activity responsibility of the saints. Therefore, and 1/7, the seventh year, that's charity. With the Old Testament formula. Now, the third and sixth year represents 2/7, 2/7 of your tithe. So what you do is you figure out 10% of all your earnings, and 2/7 of that becomes the tithe you spend for joint activities plus 3 paychecks weekly. Weekly income, prorated, 3 of them added to that. The way you pay the bill to participate in the joint responsibilities of God. Not complicated. You having fun? Now, you want me to simplify it for you? Just pay 25% to God. Pay your own bills as you work for God. Make sure you're faithful. And pay first fruits. And when the Spirit moves on you, give voluntary burnt offerings as you see how God takes care of you. But I'm telling you, nobody got by with 10%. That's the message. That's a generic principle. I don't want to put us in a frame of mind where we cross T's and dot I's until we fall into some kind of Old Testament legalism. There is a generic gestalt that I'm trying to get across to us in our giving. One thing very clear is 10% of all we have belongs to God. Period. That is off the top. 10% of all we have is God's. You don't touch it. And that goes to the storehouse, which is the place where we eat. Now that we've given 10% and the earnings thereof of all our estate, we then have a second tithe, which is 10% of what we earn off of everything we have. 20% now is in focus with two tithes. That second tithe, you have some flexibility of judgment in. Some portion of that second tithe, which I can mathematically figure out, is about 2/7 of that 10% tithe, belongs, of that second tithe, belongs in a special fund expectancy. You manage it yourself. That's the way you pay for going and coming to church. You ever thought of that? That God's aware of that? I'm aware it costs you gas money to go to church. I've told you you can stay home and be saved. I've told you you don't have to go to church to go to heaven. I've told you the main reason for coming to King's House 1 is to help your old pastor out. But you come down here and work on these phones, that takes gas money. Well, God took that into account. We have banquets. This is a good application of your $100 banquet fee. I mean, you know, this is where we party together. I would even put in this category what some people have done, which is buy Tommy Burgers for everybody here some night, or Chinese food. You become a trustee with specific application of 2/7 of your tithe, and you want to have a factor on charity, at least 1/7 of the tithe is in that seventh year, if you're not yet really to jump off in the full year, because the seventh year belonged to the Lord. And if God keeps His word, He'll so bless you for doing this that you'll be able to do all of those things. But the second tithe represents a 10% factor on the balance of your estate after you've given the first tithe to God. And there are two applications of that. 4/7 of it represents additional contributions to the Levites or those who minister to you. That's why you have quite the ability, if you have a local church. There are people, for example, that I teach, but they participate in a local church. You get most of your teaching from me. You know that. You spend 6 and 7 and 8 and 10 and 15 hours with me, and you spend 30 minutes to an hour with your local church. God's got a formula. You give that first tithe where you're getting your major ministry. You spend 30 minutes with me and 16 hours with your local church. Most of your teaching is your local church, and you just tune me in occasionally. Reverse what I'm saying. I'll be as faithful to tell you to put it where you get your teaching, if it's not me, as if it is me. But I'm telling you, if I'm your storehouse of food, you give me that first tithe. Now, you've got a second tithe that 4/7 of it is designated to the local ministry. And if I'm your local ministry, I get that too. They distinguish between the Levites in the city and what had to go to Jerusalem and God's major storehouse. If I'm your local ministry, both your local pastor, daily pastor, and storehouse of spiritual food, I get it all. But if you are feeding at my table 5, 6, and 7 days a week, and I'm your storehouse of spiritual food, and the basis by which you grow is the spiritual house, you give me that first tithe. You still got 4/7 left over for your local church, which is probably more than most of them are given, unless they're taught by me. And you got 2/7 to give to the United Way. No, I'll take it back. You got 2/7 to pay the bill for going to church and going and doing the various works that you do for your local church and local ministry. Here, you can work every day and come spend 7 nights a week working on the phones. Bus fare, car fare, that's 2/7. That's the 2 years that's set aside and called in some context the third tithe. But the third tithe is a specific use, really, of the second tithe, 2 of the years out of the 7. You follow that? The second tithe generically is 10% on the balance of your estate after you've given God the first 10%. That second tithe specifically is designated the 3rd and 6th year to pay the bill for joint activities commanded of God in the worship of God. And you've got to add to that tithe of 2/7 three paychecks a year. Or 3 weeks, if you get paid every 2 weeks. 3 weeks. No work's done those 3 weeks. And when you don't do something God's way, you redeem it with the fair market value of it. You want to keep the firstborn? You pay the price. If you have your firstborn child, you pay the price or it serves in the temple. If you're going to work the week and not take it off, you pay. You say, well, what if I want to take it off? Fine. Come here and serve on the phones 3 weeks out of the year. 8, 10 hours a day, just like you're working on a job. Buy yourself some hamburgers. Buy yourself some items you enjoy. Work here. Do what some of my guys did. They went to Reno for the banquet. Took days off. Volunteer to go up and work around the transmitter for a whole week. Clear the air and the land. 3 weeks belong to God. Well, what about my vacation? Well, you know, that belongs to you. We're not talking about you, we're talking about God. 3 weeks you join with those that you are committed to be joined with in furthering God's purposes in ways you cannot do it as an island by yourself. That bill is paid for by you out of 2/7 of your second tithe. and three paychecks for weekly amounts a year. You say, you're going to be dot the I and cross. Heck no, we're New Testament. I'm giving you point of departure principles. Would God ask those Old Testament people to do more than He's asking people He's purchased with the blood of His Son? He said, what if I don't want to do it? Well, you know, stay cursed. I don't care. Don't be blessed. Well, it's too hard. That's what Peter said when Jesus opened his mouth and laid it on him. If you can't do it willingly, don't do it. And the problem with some of you is you want to jump into it all in one fell swoop. I'm telling you something. If you've never tithed even once, you better start there. You better start there. Some of these people started listening to me 9, 10 years ago, and they're ahead of you. Don't bite off more than you can chew. But set some goals for yourself, like a bodybuilder. Set a 5-year plan down. You're going to take one ingredient. The problem with a lot of you, because the whole wad looks so hard, you never start anything. You stay cursed. Every one of these things that were legal obligations in the Old Testament become opportunities of faithing in the New Testament. You grab hold of them, and you grab hold and hang on one at a time as you learn to walk before you run in faith. I'm telling you, the promises forever are hanging up there, and all that God is the Lord of hosts, stands behind it. I'm just giving the points of departure to you. 3 weeks out of the year. Now, to anticipate what's coming, which is the most important of the offerings, the feast of the harvest and the first fruits of thy labors, which thou hast sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field. First fruits anticipated. 3 times in the year all thy male shall appear before the Lord God. Aha, ladies say. That lets me out. Fine, stay home, ladies, and keep house and let the men do it. And miss yourself a blessing. Miss yourself a blessing. It's in the New Testament translated into opportunities of blessing without gender. Now, verse 19, we're to the subject. Everything else I said was not a subject. And I'll bet you there are just a lot of people said, thank God for the Super Bowl so I don't have to listen to this and get under conviction. I hope they develop a terrific itch. Terrific itch. The first of the first fruits of thy land thou shalt bring into the house of the Lord thy God. Every year, year by year, the first fruits meant exactly that. The first income. Theirs was a barter product society. In your case, you translate it into the first check. Every year. First check is the Lord's. On top of all the rest of this.
Yeah.
10% of your estate belongs to the Lord. 10% of the income is the second tithe generically that is specifically designated and called the third tithe by some in the third and sixth year. That is set aside for your joint activities to pay the bill and has joined with it the salary, the equivalent of 3 weeks out of the year that belong to the Lord. You see, God's got a claim on 3 of your weeks out of every year. Try it off the top. You're supposed to work for Him. Give attention to Him full time, 3 weeks out of the year. In joint activities. That's why I don't believe in volunteers. I say some of you voices of faith more than do that. You add up the time and prorate it through the year that you give to God, I'll bet you're giving 3 weeks. You need to pat yourself on the back, every one of you that are doing that. Just pat yourself on the back. You were doing it and didn't know it. But having done all of that, what about first fruits? That's the subject today. Now we're into offerings is to remove the curse. Well, what do I get for it? Well, the curse is removed. That ought to be enough. You don't need anything else. Absence of curse is benefit enough. But God sort of gilds the lily. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way. Hot ziggity dog. An angel in front of me to keep thee in the way. Do you have any idea what an angel in front of you is worth on the Los Angeles freeways? Huh? Yeah, I got a real serious look out of Gil, whose motorcycle skidded under the back end of something, right? Behold, I send an angel before thee. He's got more guts than me. As far as I'm concerned, the angel can ride the motorcycle. I'm staying in case. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. He's a mean angel, too. I'll be an enemy to thine enemies, adversary to thy adversaries. Bless thy bread and thy water, verse 25, and I will take sickness away from the midst of thee. 28th verse I like, I'll send hornets before thee. I just revel in this all week. Every day I'm telling the Lord that I know where hornets would just love to nest. I got addresses. Now, I'm saying it with a touch of humor. I don't want giving to God to become a legal obligation. God told Moses when he gave these laws, you take it from the people willingly, and only if they do it willingly. The blessing is there. What is faith? But getting that little sick feeling in the pit of your stomach, I don't know if I dare to do this, but I've made up my mind I'm going to go God's way. And you launch out. Now today, the focus is on first fruits. I have asked for 3,000 out of our 25,000 king's houses, 3,000, every Gideon should do this, 3,000 that will dare to start out 1985 right. Giving God your first paycheck. You say, well, I've already spent it. You know how much it was. Well, can I pay it in installments? Well, if you have to, you know, better have a little faith than no faith at all. Well, I don't know how I can make it. I don't either. But the God of the forefront is already on the corner, whom the Lord calls, he enables. You got an angel in front of you. He can figure out how to help you make it. I'm dead serious about this. Some of you need to move on to a new plateau of giving. And you that have already done it, I wish you would get on my phones and rejoice a little. Tell me how good you felt doing it. I don't know if it's a carnal streak or not, but I love to have God beholden to me. Some of the most satisfying praying I've ever done is when I'm able to tell God what He hasn't done. Do you do that? You say, well, is that legitimate? Well, Jehoshaphat did it. He stood and said, art thou not God? And art thou not our God? And didst thou not say? And he read down the whole gamut with him. You ought to read the revival that came. God says, you don't even have to fight tomorrow. You just go out there and sing. Strangers, I mean, here's the enemy all ready to kill, and here come these people singing. And God did the killing. It took them 3 days to gather up the spoil. I like angels in front of me. I like to. I really love to pray and say, God, I'm one or two up on you. One or two up on you. Heaven ain't going to be very peaceful when I get there. You let me go through that gate without keeping your word. There's going to be one all-fired riot the day I arrive. I've scared my dad to death. I've literally, there have been a few times, reading I wear a Bible's house, not what I do here. I've literally taken the Bible and thrown it at the ceiling. I said, here, did you forget? Yeah. See, that's awful. Well, sure it is. Be real awful if I weren't right. I didn't read. God's all explained. You can't, if you never had that kind of satisfaction, you undo it. It's wonderful to be able to say, ha ha, I'm ahead of you, God. Where's that damned angel? Can't you see this asteroid orifice in front of me? Where was the angel when it went by? Some of you don't know how to pray. You listen to these stupid people. Say, oh, God, blessed be thy name. You need to pray like a man. Where the hell's the damned angel, God? You can never pray like that unless you give your first fruits. What is that? Get the edge on God a little bit. 3,000 of you. I'm telling you, if I could get 3,000 of you giving first fruits about 2 or 3 weeks from now, we'd hear sounds all over this land. Where in the hell's the damned angel, God? What I said. Get on a telephone and get an angel in your pocket. You give the first fruits. You say, well, I don't know what first fruits is. Yes, you do, silly. It's one that's your first money that came in your hands in 1985. And if you've already spent it, you just make it up. You can count. You just make it up. The only thing that's good about it, you don't have to pay tithe on that. You give it all. So if you paid tithe on the first week already and spent it, or the first paycheck and spent it, you only have to make up 90%. Because all of it was the first fruits. Got that or not?
Yes, sir.
I like Nehemiah 10. Nehemiah is a good one. They had rebuilt the walls, rebuilt the temple, and discovered the law. They hadn't been practicing it. That's why they had to spend 70 years in bondage. They realized that they were in trouble because they hadn't honored God. We are servants this day, they said, to our enemies. Nehemiah 9th chapter. We are servants this day for the land that thou gavest unto our fathers to eat the fruit thereof. You see, God wants better things for most of you than you got. But he has to find out he can trust you before he gives it back to you. Now, are you going to come to my secret Sabbath in San Francisco? I don't know what's the matter with the folks in San Francisco. I'm going to do something. And I was telling my parents at lunch, this church can be very grateful that I was a little bit ahead of changing laws in regard to churches. I'm preparing our church to survive the war against the devil. Now, we've bucked heads long enough. People from New England are asking me questions. Is the FCC the cause of this? Absolutely. Absolutely. New England is finding out, sadly, what happened to Los Angeles. The Los Angeles is going to have a miracle this week if they're faithful. And my suggestion in New England is you hang in there and become King's Houses of Faith. Absolutely. And I have made up my mind that no government agency is ever going to have this church in a position again where they can grab us in vital parts. I'm going to have their vital parts laying on an anvil with a sledgehammer right above them. I mean, you know, I believed in the system for many years. System is gone. System's gone. I mean, you don't appeal to Hitler in the bunker. You find out a way to blow him up. Now, we ain't to that yet. I'm not like Francis Schaeffer. I don't recommend revolution. I believe in fighting legally. But it is now my dedicated commitment that it's no longer what this church knows. We've always been right. Who we're going to know? I listened to those news people the other night do a riot act on Howard Hughes. People that weren't worthy to wipe his boots. You see, I can't stand traitors, don't care who they are. I don't like disloyal people, don't care who they are. You ain't ever going to get an audience with me if you turn on your employer. Well, my employer's a rat. Well, you should have had brains enough to know that before you started. Don't look for sympathy from me if you're a quitter. I'm tired of people dumping on Howard Hughes. I haven't got any proof that he lived in his own filth. I have no respect for people that took his money and wouldn't tell the world that until he was dead and couldn't defend himself. I haven't got any particular crusade for Howard Hughes. I'm just tired of what the news media does to try to destroy any kind of hero figure in this country except one they create. Usually a communist. What this society needs is some hero figures. If Howard Hughes could buy politicians, that's a politician's problem. Howard Hughes, I give him an A+. I'm going to try to buy him if I can. I'm not at all interested in listening to speeches about people that left Howard Hughes. There's so much jealousy in the world against somebody who does something. I didn't like that program on 2020. Didn't like it at all. I refuse to believe that Howard Hughes, who had 7 men at his beck and call and was so hung up on germs the way he was, would lay around naked in his own filth when he had people that could clean it up. I mean, I'm going to take more proof than somebody analyzing a bunch of letters that have been stolen that somebody's writing a book about. Now, I admire the man. I admire him a lot. And I made up my mind that this church is going to go down a path that anyone that bothers this church, at least we will have done a service to mankind, they will lose their reproductive capacities. That's good. I hope you get as mean as Tatum. A secret Sabbath is important. Secret Sunday is important. I may be the only pastor in the world who knows we're at war. Really at war. And I'm not charging a never-ending line of blockheads anymore. It is foolish to cast your lot with truth and justice when you're dealing with people who don't know the meaning of truth and care nothing for justice. You go behind them and ventilate them. I mean, I'm still a young man. I came to this church 10 years ago believing in the system. I grew up in it. I believe that if you were right, and I used to tell my attorneys, Doesn't matter. We're right, and right will out, and truth will out, and right will prevail. Somewhere up there, we'll get to 9 judges, and 5 of the 4 will see the truth. Horse spit. Somebody gets on the telephone. Horse spit. When government agencies fly men out to the West Coast to conduct clandestine depositions on Gene Scott and inquire about my sex life as the opening question, and I sue them for doing that, and the judges decide to make an example out of me and say that's a frivolous lawsuit because there's no evidence that the government used that information against me when they delivered it. The reason they didn't use it against me is they didn't find anything. I sued them for inquiring and had the guts to say my sex life, my business. I'd never let anybody find out if it was bad. Man got a sense of pride about him. I mean, that's just where I am. If I were a celibate till I was 140, I'd say Errol Flynn turned over in his grave. But ain't none of the government's business. I mean, my lackings would be paradise for those imbecilic idiots. They had no business inquiring about my sex life. That's not the business of Washington, D.C. And I sued them. And when the courts will not let me get into court and dismiss and tell me to pay the government attorneys because it's frivolous, that's when I said, this corrupt system's over. I'll make their sex life very difficult for them for the rest of my life. And when old Scott makes a decision, it's made. The system don't work anymore. You find the power centers where you can punch the buttons. And the only way to deal with a corrupt system is use it. Use it. Blacks have learned that. There are a few of them out there that are friendly enough to know that I'm going to tell them the truth when I say this. If they got any brains. And they have. Doesn't matter what happens. If you get a parking ticket, scream, it's because you're black. Don't play fair. Don't even think fair. You got something going for you, do it. I would. I mean, if I had, you know, real good makeup, I'd make everybody apologize for everything they did to me. You got a corrupt system, you get the power base, and you carve out your territory. I'm going to tell you something. There ain't no such thing as race issues. I never have seen race anyway. I only see one color of blood, Jesus Christ. There ain't no such thing as a race issue. There's only an in and out issue. And I tell my wonderful black friends, if they ever got as much power as the whites have had for many years, they'd abuse it. That's just sin. Sin at work. And there are very few exceptions to that rule. It's like the Twilight Zone. If everybody was ugly, they'd make you take plastic surgery to be ugly. It doesn't make it any less... It doesn't make it any less wrong at all. It's like those black Jews in Ethiopia. Couldn't believe that you're a Jew and you're white. I got Mark Travis working for me. I've been calling him a honky Jew ever since I heard that. So you didn't know most of you Jews were a bunch of honky Jews. Those black Falashian Jews, they didn't think anybody could be a Jew and not be black. See, the Christian is supposed to reach a stage where he understands that sin works at every level. And power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's time to balance the scale of power. And I have defended civil rights on all levels all of my life. But I think the black people have gotten smart enough to make the system work for them. It's good for them. About time some churches get smart enough. The only ones been smart down through the centuries is the Catholic Church. They sure made it work for them. Well, I'd like the Pope to kiss my hand someday. I mean, don't I teach you to think big? I mean, set goals for yourself, friends. But I tell you, I ain't going to wear that dress he wears, I'll tell you that for sure. I'm going to keep wearing my intelligent hats. I mean, that fish head, I don't want a fish head on. I never did go big for rings either. I mean, I'm telling you, quit bucking your head against the wall. Demonstrations get attention, but after a while you start grabbing hold of some of the handles of power. Well, the world would love to tell us how to be a church. Your power lies in the Spirit. Yes, I got a spirit of brains. And he leadeth me. The green pastures. I made up my mind this church is going to survive. I played fair for 10 years. I ain't going to play fair anymore. I believe I'll get a special dispensation in heaven lying to crooks. Anytime you can lie to a bureaucrat, that is a higher form of truth. You can't mean that. You just think I don't. Oh, Scott's been pushed too far. Oh, you ever see a bully? Oh, they love to tell you. They memorize the Queensberry rules so they can make you live by them. That ain't fair, they'll say. That's right. Let's pray. Close your eyes. Quack! Let's pray about this. Bow your head, please. Wham! Now, some of you are squeamish about that. Go join a sweetheart church. What about passiveness? Well, I believe in it. I admire Martin Luther King. You know, I don't have any truck with those people. He wasn't any communist. That's stupid. I'm glad he did what he did. I'm glad we got a day for him. But it worked because there still was some conscience left in the society. It worked because there was a federal state of mind to suppress the state state of mind. Right now, there's an anti-church attitude across this nation. And there is an assumption that government is purer than churches. And therefore, churches must prove to government that they deserve respect. And only after you prove you're honest will you believe you're honest. And churches are somehow the harborers of crooks. And the government must monitor and police and approve us. I happen to believe the opposite. The church is going to judge the world. And to hell with government. Now, I have stood on the Constitution. It's still there. But we have put so many government attorneys on the benches, the system doesn't work anymore. Therefore, I think the churches should be wise as servants, serpents, harmless as doves. I intend to be both. And I intend to move this church in directions that will guarantee that we can move into the centers of power and protect our right to exist and quit heading down a trail of butting our head into blockheads. You say, why didn't you think about this 10 years ago? Well, I did, but I thought the system still worked, and we gave it one good try. Now, I'm telling you, congregation, I'm going to lead this church down paths that guarantees its survival. And I want this church to become one of the wealthiest churches in the world. Simple as that. Money's power. And I happen to believe we'll use it better than Satan's disciples. I believe we can be trusted. And I ain't on trial with anybody. And I figure I can be a pretty nice guy, you know that? I can be rather likable when I want to be. I haven't found anybody in this world talk on any subject. I can't talk to them. I know how to make friends and influence people. When it's worth it. Now, I figure I got a duty as the under-shepherd to make sure that the sheep of this fold are looked out for. And I ain't throwing you to the wolves anymore. I mean, you know, we've been teeth sharpeners long enough. They can sink their teeth into somebody else's asteroid. While they're doing it, I'm going to be back there in secret somewhere that when they come to the dentist chair to get a tooth filled, they're going to get five of them pulled. How's that, being honest with you? The answer in New England is yeah. One more time. The FCC got its little corrupt pound of flesh. Ain't going to make no big to-do about it. I'm going to have all of their little old balloons and pop them. You know, they can just dream on. My day's coming. And if you believe God, a surprise will happen this week. You just believe God or not. I have changed my tactics. I used to get mad. I'm still good at that. I've practiced for so many years. I will never lose that skill. I know how to get mad. But I have decided that instead of getting mad for the next 10 years, I'm going to get even. You know, I'm going to tilt windmills anymore. You know, the tragic hero. Somebody else have the tragedy. Now, do you want to come to Secret Sabbath? I want you to get on that phone and make your reservations for Secret Sabbath. I was going to go into Nehemiah 10, but you already know what first fruits are. I'm tired of you not making your banquet reservations. We're going to have a banquet in New York City. We're going to have a banquet in Hartford. Every one of you in New England better make your reservations for the Hartford banquet in the next 2 days. Otherwise, how in the world are we going to know how to contact you?
Every person in New England better make your reservation for the $100 a plate Hartford banquet. We're going to have one in Hartford. We're going to have one in New York City. We're going to have one in Dallas, Fort Worth. We're going to have one in every city. We're going to have one in Campbellsville. But we're having one February 23rd in San Francisco. And we're going to have one in Orange County. You'll look at me so strange. I can't tell you anymore. You've got to come to the secret banquets. That's where I tell you what I'm doing. This world has ceased to be what it once was. A society of law where the law was applied without favor. That isn't true anymore. We're on a hell-bent path of the government taking over everything, and Haman is growing larger every day, and Mordecai's are getting hung. Well, the message I need to emphasize more and more, I used to say, somewhere there is an Esther. Somewhere there's an Esther. Mordecai would have been hung if there hadn't been an Esther in the court of the king. And I kept saying, somewhere there's an Esther. Well, I just finally said, to hell with it. I'm going to be the Esther. You understand me? I'm going to be the Esther. Just give me about 5 more years. You watch. Since I've waited 10 years for an Esther, and if there are any there, they don't have Esther's guts to say, if I perish, I perish. I decided, well, you know, I can sing 2 parts. I'll be Mordecai and Esther. But it's not enough to be in sackcloth out there at the gate, tromped on by Haman. You got to have an Esther up there that has the ear of the guy that can tromp on Haman. Now, I'm asking you to make me an Esther. I tell you, you women are superior beings. I'd like to try that role for a while. To throw a few banquets. Not the kind I'm throwing now. Secret banquets, they're for my friends. But I want to tell you something. When we accomplish what Secret Sunday and Secret Sabbath is talking about, I'll then throw some banquets designed to set Haman up. You see, What I'm trying to tell you is that the kings that were able to do what Esther asked her to do don't go to dinner at a cabin in the corner of Glory Land. You understand me? I mean, I've always been open with you. The whole world ought to figure out where I'm going. I'm tired of staying out there side the gate saying like a prophet, it's the truth, do it. They all go by, interesting, he's right, but there ain't nobody up there we dare buck. I'm still a young man. I ain't stupid. I know how to talk in parables. I know how to play a sweetheart role. This country is run by women anyway. Do you ladies know that when I want to turn the charm on, I can charm a lady pretty good? You ain't ever seen me do that. I'm always on the run. You let me go to dinner with the king and his wife, I'll charm the pants off of her. I got it. angel in front of me.
And that's what Secret Sunday's about. That's what Secret Sabbath's about. You'd be surprised, people that have already started to talk about coming and seeing me. They've only seen the tip of the iceberg. You say, isn't that elitism? You got it. How'd you figure it out so quick?
Well, the elites are wrong.
Well, you know, that's fine, but I'll be dead and gone before they're gone, so I'm going to get in there and manipulate. Don't you believe in the power of God? I sure do. I believe in the power of God to place me there. That's exactly what I want. Through you, I want to tell you something. Esther didn't get in the court of King Ahasuerus because she was a devout Jew. That little trick used all of her weapons. She got there because of her talent. And her ability to communicate what she had to offer. God did not just pick her up and put her there. She matriculated. Smart woman. Now, folks, I want you to help me matriculate. I've lived by a philosophy for many years. There ain't nobody else to do it yourself. Now, I've played my Haman role. Going to add Esther to my portfolio. And I'm going to plan some super banquets. I can't wait for Haman to lead me while I sit on his ass. Now that's what Secret Sabbath is about. What in the hell are you staying home for? $100 is the cheapest thing you're getting a bargain. And every city, I don't know why you aren't lined, I don't know why New England isn't lined up saying, get in here. You better. You want me to tell you what, I'll tell you. I got an additional secret for New England. At the banquet, I'm going to tell you what's going on in New England. At the banquet in New York City and at the banquet in Hartford, I'll tell you the whole story. But I'm tired of just telling all my secrets to the enemy.